Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2002, with the release date of Friday, March 11th, 2016, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. A treasured vintage radio finds a new home. Hams in Australia celebrate 50 years of nostalgia and friendship. California de-expeditioners make a gift to students in the Falkland Islands. And an Ohio amateur looks at nearly 9 decades of life on the bands. All this and more in Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2002, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now reporting from Charleston, West Virginia, here is Jim Damron in 8TMW.
We begin this week's newscast with a story of past and present. In early February, Amateur Radio Newsline shared the story of a vintage radio receiver that was making a journey from College Station, Texas, to its new home at the USS Indianapolis Memorial Museum. Well, it has arrived and is settling in nicely, and we're happy to bring you this update, courtesy of Mike Surser, WA9FDO.
A few weeks back, Don Wilbanks reported on the donation of a rare RCK World War II radio receiver by Mr. Doug Christensen, KG5KSG of College Station, Texas. We're happy to report that the radio, manufactured by the E.H. Scott Company in 1944, has been received in Indianapolis by the volunteer ham operators at the USS Indianapolis Memorial Radio Room. Chuck Christ, W9IH, the volunteer coordinator for the radio room, explains the significance of this rare find.
In the 1940s, the USS Indianapolis carried two different types of float planes, and it would launch these airplanes with a catapult off of the deck of the cruiser. Now, that was the problem. They had to be able to talk to the pilots in that airplane, which were working on a frequency somewhere between 115 and 156 megahertz, or megacycles in those days. This RCK was used as the receiver set of the TDQ, which was the transmitter, to allow the folks on the cruiser to talk to the airplane pilots and help them get back to the ship so they could get picked up. We're finding out that the one we've got now is working very well, and the guys are having a lot of fun playing with that.
The radio room exhibit is the result of 8 years of work, contains over 50 pieces of fully operational equipment of the type aboard the ship at the time of its sinking, just 5 days before the end of World War II. For a look inside the room and the history behind the ship, log on to their website at www.usindyradio.org. From the Indiana War Memorial in downtown Indianapolis, this is Mike Surser, WA9FDO, reporting for Newsline.
Speaking of history, time has gone by. Lots of time, since a small group of hams in Australia first gathered at Easter time for a social weekend. Well, the group has decided it's time to catch up with one another's lives. And Amateur Radio Newsline's Graham Kemp, VK4BB, lets us in on what they've got planned.
Amateur Radio was 50 years younger, as were its licensees and their families, on a long-ago Easter Saturday when 15 or 20 people attended a campsite gathering at the Serratitas Reserve on the banks of the Burnett River in VK4. They seemed to have a good time from what some of them can remember, so they thought they'd try again. The group now has plans to return to the Central Queensland site on the 26th of March, and they're going to party like it's 1966 again. Although the main events will be eyeball chatter, sharing memories and offering a welcome to young and prospective hams, there's also going to be a little bit of on-air activity. Plans are to work 7.060 MHz on 40 and 146.5 Simplex FM on 2. The social camping weekend reunion was organised by Kev VK4MKB, Brandon VK4VIP and Jeff VK4GI. Of course, in the ensuing decade since that original event, some things have changed. Jeff was still a year away from getting his call sign, Kev himself was only 8 years old, and Brandon, on the other hand, hadn't even been thought of yet. But one thing remains constant for them all, as Jeff told Amateur Radio Newsline in an email, and I quote, "We've been friends for one very, very long time," end quote. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Graham Kemp, VK4BB, down the river a bit from Serratus Reserve.
The frontier explorers Meriwether Lewis and William Clark could probably have benefited from having an amateur radio on board as they made their way through what was then the New American West. But the next best thing to that is the amateur radio operation taking place on Saturday, March 19th at the historic Illinois site that marks the starting point of the Adventurer's Trail. Helping mark the National Park Service's centennial, the State of Illinois Historic Site, located at the beginning of the Lewis and Clark National Historic Trail, will be hosting the all-day event from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., showcasing amateur radio. Local hams will be demonstrating the use of backup communications under emergency conditions, and will talk about ham radio's role aboard the International Space Station, as well as with the American Red Cross and the Federal Emergency Management Agency. The site is located in Hartford, Illinois, a few miles north of Illinois Route 3, and is operated by the Illinois Historic Preservation Agency. On March 19th, however, it will be operated by hams instead. In California, a noted group of avid DXers recently back from the Falklands has decided, after working the bands in the Falkland Islands, to get down to the task of helping some of the schools there in a very amateur radio kind of way. We hear now from Amateur Radio Newsline's Neil Rapp, WB9VPG.
Forget for a moment all those QSL cards generated by the recent Intrepid DX Group de-expedition through the Falkland Islands. There's another kind of bounty, one that's likely to be more long-lasting. The Northern California DX Foundation, which operated the de-expedition, has announced a scholarship grant to the Falkland Island elementary and middle schools so they can buy amateur radio antennas, kits, and other equipment for the students, as well as to create supporting material for the classroom curriculum. The foundation credits David Cullingham, K3LP, with doing the groundwork while in the Falklands, meeting with school administrators, teachers, and government officials as the team worked the bands recently in its South Sandwich and South Georgia operations. Part of the California Foundation's charter provides for the scholarship opportunities and for projects such as this to support the next generation of amateurs. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Neil Rapp, WB9VPG in Bloomington, Indiana.
It's time to start thinking about the Dayton Hamvention, and for some DXers, it's also time to start thinking about the Dayton DX Dinner. Amateur Radio Newsline's Stephen Kenford, N8WB, has the details.
What's on the menu at the 2016 Dayton DX Dinner? Fellowship, giveaways, award presentations, all that, plus a great meal. But if you don't get your tickets soon, you could go hungry and miss out on everything. The Southwest Ohio DX Association, which is sponsoring the 31st annual DX Dinner in conjunction with Dayton Hamvention, reports that tickets are selling quickly. Individual reservations or entire tables of 10 can be purchased by going to the Southwest Ohio DX Association website and using PayPal, or you can download a mail-in registration form. Visit the website at www.swodxaevents.org. The event is Friday, May 20th at the Dayton Marriott. Last year, more than 400 amateurs attended. Don't forget to stick around for the next day's event, also geared to DXers. On Saturday, May 21st, the Hera Arena will open its doors to a DX forum. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinford, NAWB in Wadsworth, Ohio.
Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline. Heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the WB7TJD repeaters 14712 and 449600 after the 8 p.m. Superstition Amateur Radio Club Net on Wednesdays in Mesa, Phoenix, Arizona. Also on KB7KWK-L Echo Link. St. Piran, the patron saint of Cornwall, predates radio by several centuries. But the two were in perfect harmony earlier this month when a group of radio operators in Great Britain marked an important event in their community. We hear more from Amateur Radio Newsline's Jeremy Boot, G4NJH.
St. Piran's presence is perhaps felt most keenly in Cornwall, where the 5th century abbot is the patron saint. that his message was heard all over the world on the 5th of March, when Cornish radio amateurs from the Poldhu Amateur Radio Club completed more than 300 contacts with fellow hams using Morse code. Operating with the call sign GK3MPD, they worked from the Marconi Centre above Poldhu Cove near Mullion. MPD itself is a significant call sign and had been the call for the old Marconi station, where the pioneering scientist himself made the world's first transatlantic radio contact. The St. Piran's Day event was blessed with favourable radio conditions, and early on the operators completed contacts in code with four stations in Japan, and later heard from Canada, parts of Asiatic Russia, and even the US. These contacts evoked some camaraderie beyond the usual fellowship that can emerge amongst amateurs. The club's honorary secretary, Keith Matthew, G0WYS, told the West Britain website, "A surprising number claimed a bit of Cornish in their ancestry." For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jeremy Bucci, 4NH in Nottingham in the UK.
If you are a radio amateur in the Philippines, you only have a few days to submit your nominations for the Lifetime Achievement Award being given this year by the Philippine Amateur Radio Association. Deadline is Tuesday, March 15th, and the names of your nominees should be emailed to para1932@gmail.com. That's P-A-R-A. The award recognizes the achievements of senior members of the amateur radio community. Awardees are typically at least 80 years of age, endorsed by two para members in good standing, and have a proven record of outstanding contributions to amateur radio. The award will be presented on April 9th at the Para Convention in Dumaguete City. In South Africa, it's all over now, except the voting. 18 nominees have been identified for the South African Radio League's Amateur Radio Hall of Fame, and ballots are being cast. Nominees include such silent keys as radio pioneers John Streeter, Dave Larson, and Dixon Bennett, as well as active members who are leaving their mark on our hobby today. To vote, visit the league website at www.sarl.org.za and select the nominations page. Visit the homepage and follow the link under Activities. You must be a league member to vote, and you can cast your ballot for as many as five nominees. The Hall of Fame may honor established amateurs, but the South African Radio League's YouthNet is designed especially to help the next generation get established. The next monthly YouthNet on Sunday, March 13th, is designed to attract young people and give them a taste of what it's like to be on the air. Even the curious and the unlicensed can participate as long as they are under the supervision of a licensed amateur. There will be a drawing for a prize based on shack logs after the YouthNet is over. This is also a chance for many radio operators to make up for lost time. The February YouthNet ended up being canceled as a result of poor propagation and severe thunderstorms hitting the Kempton Park and Johannesburg areas. If you're comfortable working with and analyzing large sets of data and enjoy looking at the work of amateur contesters, the Radio Society of Great Britain might want to make use of your time and your skills. The Society is studying alternative ways to score VHF contests with an eye toward making the scoring system more evenly balanced across the country. The Society is looking for volunteers who can assist with this process, which is a continuation of the President's Review of Contesting that was begun in 2015. Volunteers will be asked to analyze open logs being generated and study other data that is available publicly. If you want to assist, contact Andy Cook, G4PIQ, via email at vhfcc.chair@rsgb.org.uk. A Polish team of operators working as 5J0P from San Luis, San Andres Island, will continue through March 21st, using CW, SSB, and RIDI on 160 through 6 meters, QSL via the club logs OQRS tools for bureau and direct requests. No QSL cards, please. QSL manager is SP6IXF. Matthias, DJ2HD, is once again active as 7P8DJ from Lesotho through March 15th. He's working holiday style on CW, SSB, and RIDI on the HF bands. QSL via his home call sign, direct or by the Bureau. Richard G3RWL is working as 8P6DR from Barbados, March 29th through April 22nd. He'll be on the air holiday style on 80 through 10 meters using CW and RIDI. QSL via his home call sign, direct or by the Bureau, using Club Logs OQRS. Hero, JA6WFM, will be active in Tonga as A31MM during the CQ Worldwide WPX SSB contest taking place March 26th and 27th. He'll work on a single-op all-band low-power entry, QSL via EA5GL or Logbook of the World. No doubt you've heard of Last Man Standing, the popular TV show whose star is a ham radio operator. But have you ever heard of First Kid Sitting? Well, that would have described a teenaged Jack Goldfarb in 1941 as he sat in an FCC office in downtown Cleveland taking the exam which would make him a licensed ham at age 16. Goldfarb, W8WGO, who turns 92 this month, was the only youngster that day. Indeed, he was the only test taker. But it's probably the last time he experienced anything solitary connected with ham radio. Radio and Morse code served him well during his time in the Army during World War II. And for years, the University Heights resident used an antenna mounted atop his 40-foot tower at home. And like so many other DXers, merged his world with those of hands overseas. Now he's more often finding his way into pileups via smaller antennas or letting the internet help his radio make those connections. In a recent interview with Cleveland.com, he explained how he often ends up elmering some of his long-distance contacts too, and he described how making contact with them is what keeps him feeling and maybe even looking younger than his years. His 16-year-old self, that first kid sitting, would probably also be the first one to agree. With thanks to Allen Labs, the ARRL, the Alton Telegraph, Cleveland.com, CQ Magazine, DX.net, Jeff Bonney, VK4GI, Hap Holly, and The Rain Report, Irish Radio Transmitter Society, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, QSL.net, QRZ.com, Radio Society of Great Britain, Mike Surser, WA9FDO, Southgate Amateur Radio News, Philippine Amateur Radio Association, Southwest Ohio DX Association, Twit TV, WestBritain.com, Wireless Institute of Australia, and you, our listeners, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at www.arnewsline.org. For now, with Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT, at the news desk in New York, and our news team worldwide, I'm Jim Dameron, NATMW in Charleston, West Virginia, saying 73, and as always, we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2016, all rights reserved.